Well, Melinda Myers has been a favorite Garden Talk guest for a long time. She's the author of more than 20 garden books and is the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. Melinda always has great advice for making the most of our gardens and has a knack for helping us see our gardens and their potential in a different light. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller today, and we're always happy when Melinda Myers can spend time with us. And Melinda, welcome back.
Thank you, Judith. It's always great to talk gardening and visit with you and your listeners. And I just want to thank everyone who stops by to say hello when I'm out on the road. And a lot of fans of this show, Garden Talk. And well, so it's always nice to meet them in person.
Well, that's great. And actually, speaking of in person, the last time we talked with you was in Eau Claire when you were on the way back to Milwaukee from the Twin Cities. And Larry and I were up in Eau Claire for a listener dinner. And so we got to do the show with you live from the Eau Claire studios.
I know. How crazy. We got to get together in Madison and Milwaukee.
Exactly.
We have to go to Eau Claire.
So. But it was fun. And it was great. That was the first time I got to meet you in person. So it feels like I know you so much better now.
Me too. I know. It's always great to do that. And I just want to put a plug in. I'm going to be out for those in the southeast Wisconsin area. I'm making my last two visits for the spring at the Steins in Mequon, and they're Just Plants in Cedarburg, so you can bring your questions. I'm doing demos. We've been having a lot of fun shopping together.
Great. You know, and when are those?
Pardon me?
When are those?
Mequon is up on Port Washington Road, just south of Mequon Road. And the Just Plants is in a municipal parking lot in Cedarburg. So it'll be on my website.
Great.
Under events. And I think you guys always link to me.
Yep. So. And it's melindamyers.com, and it's M-Y-E-R-S.
Correct. So if people are in the area and have questions, stop by. Or if they want to hang out, we're doing containers. Gardens and summer garden care. So
perfect.
We've been having a lot of fun putting to containers, kind of doing group efforts there, you know, looking at the cool new plants. And I always end up filling my car up because you never can have enough plants.
It's true. Well, sometimes you can have.
Oh, I have.
There
many,
is
actually.
Such a thing as too much of a good thing sometimes.
I see your container garden, which I love the fact. When I started container gardening, I did just what you did. I used a lot of 5-gallon buckets, punched holes in the bottom. Great containers for tomatoes, and you could paint them up, gather them up, or just create a nice scene because the plants really steal the show. And boy, fresh from the garden tomatoes, oh, can't beat it.
And Melinda is referring to a photo that I put up on the show's Facebook page. My container garden last year, which I have to say I'm off to a slow start this year. I was gone for a big chunk of April, and so I'm way behind on things, but still hopeful that I can get a few things in. But I had 32 containers last year, a whole variety of things that I grew. Some did better than others, but tomatoes, I had 12 different varieties, peppers, eggplant, horseradish, cucumbers, basil, rhubarb, black and red currants, different kinds of greens, parsley. But there are some challenges with container gardening, and that is where we're going to start, although, of course, Melinda can answer questions on pretty much anything going on in your garden. But let's talk a little bit about containers. There are a lot of different reasons why we sometimes plant in containers instead of in the ground. What are some of the main reasons that you see people using that technique, Melinda?
Well, I think small space. A lot of gardeners, I'm seeing, people moving into condos and apartments, or maybe they have too much shade in their landscape. I have a small lot, so I never have enough room for all those plants that I really don't need to buy anyway. And sometimes your sunniest spot is on your patio, and there's no place to plant. I also see a lot of people doing containers for, like you said, there's some benefits and there's some challenges. You know, if you go on vacation, somebody needs to water them
right.
for you. But, boy, the weeding is a lot easier. You're really controlling the environment. It's a lot easier to, you know, you buy some good quality potting mix and plant. And the other thing I'm seeing, and I don't know if it's just because I like doing it, but bringing your garden right to your entertainment space. So you have people over, you cook out, you eat out on the patio or the balcony or the deck, and boy, how fun is it to reach over and pluck some mint, which honestly should only be grown in a pot surrounded by concrete, right?
Right.
And, you know, to put in your iced tea or your mojito or maybe basil, or you've got a pot of rosemary by the grill or some dill that you like to use when you're grilling. And it's great because it does a couple things. For gardeners, you know, we all get excited. And if you love to cook and entertain, it adds another dimension. My dish I took to a Memorial Day event was a pot of greens and chives and pansies. And so I brought my container, decorated the outside patio area, and then everyone could pluck lettuce off. It was, you know, organically grown to put on their sandwich. And then if they wanted a little onion flavor, some chives.
Wow.
And that's the kind of cooking I like to do.
Yeah. No, and like you said, it does double duty as decoration and also something to nibble on. And I also like the idea of having herbs near a place where you're going to walk by, because even just brushing against a rosemary bush or mint leaves, it releases a little of that scent, and you really feel like you're in the garden in a very real sense.
I had a master gardener tell me she grew scented geraniums, and she put them in containers on the side of her house right by her back door. So whenever she'd walk out to empty the recyclables, garbage, or hang the laundry, she'd brush up against them, and it was a little aromatherapy that made that job a little more pleasant.
Right. And you know, you alluded to this fact, but one thing to keep in mind with container gardening is that containers dry out a lot faster, and they both heat up and cool down a lot faster than something that's planted in the ground.
You bet. And then the other problem is this year especially, you know, and I think you feel behind, and I think we all do, even though it's still early June, this crazy March, you know, I feel like we're all feeling way behind, and there's still plenty of time to plant. You're probably just behind what you usually do.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm kind of hanging in there.
Well, and truthfully, when I'm on my usual schedule, I end up having to cart all those containers inside a couple nights because it's going to dip down and, you know, I don't want to leave the tomatoes out there. So truthfully, being a little behind might actually save me a little work.
At least this year. And I was going to mention, too, when you were talking about drying out, with the winds we've been having this year and the extremely high temperatures followed by cold, followed by high, things are drying out very quickly. So even if you're used to watering daily, smaller containers, check them if it's been windy, hot, really sunny, because you may need to give them an extra dose of water, you know, in the afternoon or evening if they dry out. So, and then self-watering pots, that greatly improve too. So if you're thinking, I want to do containers, but I don't have the time, Gardener Supply has some wonderful self-watering pots, and I'm good at watering my plants, and I have someone that'll water when I'm traveling, but my daughter, not so good, and another friend, not so good. So I've potted up some self-watering plants or that planter so that, you know, I'm not putting those plants to death.
Right, right. It's not a death sentence.
Exactly.
Giving them.
And they're holding their own. I mean, you know, you keep that reservoir pretty full. You water them every few days or once a week, depending on the weather. And it's a little more forgiving. So if you travel or you go up north for the weekend a lot, you know, it's a way to have containers and still have success.
I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today on Garden Talk, talking with Melinda Myers. She is a Milwaukee-based garden guru, author of many books, and also the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. And you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Chris Molina, our on-air producer today, will be happy to answer your questions, answer your calls, and then Melinda can answer your questions.
That might be better.
as much as we love Chris, I'm not sure that his garden advice will be quite up to snuff. And you can also email at talk@wpr.org. We're starting out talking about container gardening, but I'm sure that we'll go in many different directions from there. I just want to say that necessity is the mother of invention or something. The reason I have a container, I refer to it as the container plantation with so many things, is that two of my neighbors, and we live in a part of Madison that has very small lots. So two neighbors have black walnut trees, which means that basically any ground that I would put something in my yard will be affected by black walnuts. And for those of you that are lucky enough not to have to know this, there are a lot of things that won't grow near black walnuts, especially things like tomatoes and peppers and eggplants. A lot of the vegetables that you might like to grow will not do well near black walnuts. And so because, you know, it really was a death sentence, as you said, putting a tomato in the ground, it would grow, and then literally overnight just kind of keel over when it hit the toxic stuff that black walnuts release from their roots. So I had to start container gardening, or I wasn't going to be able to grow those things.
And that's a good point. And I was just recently, we shot some Melinda's Garden Moments at Northwind Perennials in Burlington, on the west side of Burlington, just north of Lake Geneva. And they have a lot of black walnuts, and they have beautiful gardens planted under there. So for folks that are looking for examples of plants that will tolerate black walnuts, I mean, you made the perfect, you know, this is what you do for the things that don't tolerate it. But I know a lot of gardeners are often looking for landscape plants. You might want to check out the Northwind Perennial garden. It's a beautiful garden. It's great ideas, because I'm a visual person, mm-hmm. I think, like so many of us. And seeing things work always helps stick in my brain better. So for those struggling, there's some lists that are very limited, but there's some good examples there, too, that you could see in person. Kind of a fun trip, and if you're a plant person or you just want a pretty setting, great place to go and take a walk and look around.
And the name of that again is?
Northwind Perennials, and great. It's in Burlington on Hospital Road.
Great.
Really nice folks that own the place, beautiful space. The garden, we shot there for 2 days, and the garden, well, you know this, all the gardeners out there are going, I know, but it changed just in 24 hours, and I'd been
wow.
the week before, and it was a lot. You know, just gardens are so dynamic.
Yeah, it's very true.
You know, it's just very exciting to watch.
So before we go to the phones, and there are folks that are waiting to join in, but I want to make sure we talk about, and we can talk more about different types of containers later, because I think there are some creative ones. Like you said, I have mainly the 5-gallon white buckets, and I have to say folks at Whole Foods were great about giving them to me and saving them for me, because I knew I was going to need quite a few. But there are other kinds of containers that we can use, and we'll talk about those. But I want to make sure we talk about what kind of soil or potting material to put in containers, because it's different. You shouldn't just throw some dirt in that you would have in your garden into a container, because you need to have a different kind of balance.
You're absolutely right. Garden soil in a pot is not going to drain well, even if it's great garden soil. So, you know, in the old days, I used to mix a third topsoil, a third peat moss, and a third some kind of drainage material like perlite, vermiculite, or something like that. And I always made my own. But then I found I was getting a lot of weed seeds in the topsoil, hard to find good topsoil, and there was no way I was digging soil out of my little yard. So I looked for potting mixes that are consistent, because I do, like you, do a lot of containers. So for me, consistency is important. Most of them contain some kind of compost or peat moss or pine bark or something like that, organic matter, and perlite. And so they're designed to hold moisture but have good drainage. Find the brand that works for you. I picked one that is that the professionals have used for many years and find that that works very well, and it's consistent for me. And then I like to include a low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer, something like a Milorganite. So I mix that in when I'm planting, and then when I water, it releases a little bit of nutrients every time I water. And the reason I do that is I'm not good at the mixing thing. Oh, I'll do that tomorrow. Oh, I'll do that. And it's next week, and it's a month, and, you know, they don't get fed. So if I can do it at the start of the season, and then if I need to, I can top-dress, put a little bit on the mm-hmm. surface mid-season, low-nitrogen so it won't burn. Then my plants are going to look good and get fed properly. Little bits of nutrients throughout the season instead of a big burst, nothing, a big burst and nothing, and less work for me. And, you know, I love to garden, but I just don't have time to do as much as I want.
Right. So. And one thing to keep in mind with the fertilizing is that because, first of all, it's a small amount of material that the plants are planted in a container, and because you're having to water more often, and because you want to give it a good soaking usually, so, you know, the roots aren't just at the top, you're actually washing out a lot of nutrients, and the plants are feeding more heavily on that small quantity too. So you probably need to be adding more in than you would think you would, again, if the plant was just in the ground.
Exactly. And so, you know, always monitor the health and vigor of your plants and let them be the guide. And some potting mixes already have fertilizer mixed in, so you want to make sure you're not adding more unless you need to. So check the bag. Whatever it says on the bag will be true, and that's what you should use in terms of, okay, do I need to add anything else for the way I like to garden?
It's Garden Talk on The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry today and talking with Melinda Myers. She is a Milwaukee-based garden guru, the author of many books on gardening, and host of Melinda's Garden Moments. It's Garden Talk on The Larry Miller Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry. Larry will be back behind the microphone on Monday, so it'll be great to have him back after some well-deserved time off. And joining us today is Melinda Myers. She is a Milwaukee-based garden expert and is happy to answer your questions. And Melinda, we have folks that have been waiting patiently to ask you questions. So let's go to the phone, and Joya in Fitchburg is up first. Hi, Joya.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions for Melinda. One is, I just got a tulip tree.
Oh, I love tulip trees.
Yes. And it's in a fairly sunny spot, but I just wanted to ask you, how often should I feed it?
It's planted in the ground, correct?
Yes.
And is your soil heavy clay or?
Oh, clay.
Okay. With trees, the research has shown that if we wait a year after planting trees and shrubs, we get better benefit from fertilization. That first year, they're really putting down roots and getting established. And so by waiting a year, then we put the fertilizer down, they're more efficient. If you feel the need to fertilize once with a very slow-release, low-nitrogen fertilizer, because we don't want to promote growth upward, we want it to root. And so trees and shrubs really don't need as much fertilizer as we think. If your soil is heavy and it's nutrient-rich, it will be fine. It'll hold on to the nutrients quite well. If you leave your grass clippings on the lawn area, it'll add nitrogen, and if there's plantings nearby. So if you wait a year, if you do it either at planting once with a slow-release, low-nitrogen, otherwise wait a year and do the same, a low-nitrogen, slow-release, something like a Milorganite, and then wait a few years and see how the plant's growing. Yearly fertilizer for most are not needed. Water and mulch are the best things we can do for our tree. So good soaking. Check the soil when the top 4 to 6 inches are crumbly but moist. Give it another good soaking.
Okay.
And mulching. 2 to 3 inches of wood chips, not piled around the trunk, but away from the trunk and as wide as you can stand, will get your tree off to a good start.
Okay. Thank you. The other one is about the ground cover roses.
Okay.
They're nicely blooming. I got them 2 years ago, called the Red Ribbon variety.
Okay.
One of the local nurseries.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, I need two more. And this year, they are not available anywhere.
Huh.
But one of the store has called the floral carpet they're selling. I checked with the nursery. They said you can use this, but it's not the same variety. And I don't know much about it, so I just wanted your expert opinion about the floral carpet.
Yeah, I've got a floral carpet. I had to laugh when when they first came out. They came out in August, and a lot of us planted them, myself included. They didn't make it through the winter. We thought they weren't any good. I rebought one the next spring, and I've had it for 15 or 20 years. They're a little bit bigger. They get to be about 2 to 3 feet high and 5 feet wide, And I'm talking about flower carpet. Is that the one? It may not blend nicely with your other one, but they would be compatible. So it might not, it may be just, and if it's, one of the things to do by mixing it up is if they, hopefully, if they are in a way that it looks like an intentional thing, then it's even better. So you might want to look for those. Floral carpet rose, yeah, that's just another one. And, yeah, those are just a little bit bigger. So you may want to just kind of arrange it accordingly. But they're good plants, do very well, good bloomers. You should be okay.
So when Joya is talking about ground cover roses, are these really low, almost like creeping roses?
Yeah, there's some that are. How tall are yours? You said they were red ribbon?
Yes. These are not exactly creeping, but they are also fairly good, good size roses. Almost like, I should say, 4 to 6 inches of the rose, width. And also, they're about 2 feet high now.
Oh, okay.
So they are, but they, I have not seen them much spreading, but I was told they do spread. I don't know whether they spread by rhizomes or by...
Sometimes what happens with a lot of those creeping ones is because the branches, the canes go outward, they root along the stem.
Mm.
So it's you know, the main trunk or the main stems are coming out of one place, and as they creep along, they'll root along. And the flower carpets are just kind of wide and low-growing.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah, so I think those will work out well together because that sounds like they're similar heights.
Hmm.
And it might be a way to blend. I haven't there, you know, it would be the internet would be your next bet to try to find something, the red ribbon.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Joya. And I didn't realize that there were roses that kind of creep along the ground. I tend to think of roses as more upright. And actually, we had a couple of questions, I think from even about a week ago, questions about roses that were put on our Facebook. One was someone said that their little rose bush that was planted at the house when they bought it 7 years ago had never bloomed, and this year it bloomed. And was there something special about this year that with that early spring or something that might have triggered that?
Well, it might have been that, but it may also have been their pruning. Did they change their pruning?
It didn't sound like it.
Okay.
It sounded like they were kind of ignoring it since it hadn't really done anything, and then all of a sudden it did something.
Okay. Then, you know what? This winter has been very interesting. I bet it's the mild temperatures. It may have gotten things going. And it sounds like it was an old plant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, also, did they take down a tree where the growing conditions might have changed, more sunlight, opened it up a little bit more? But also, I remember when I was studying horticulture many years ago, one of my professors said the plants don't read the book, so just
right.
Give it up.
Right. Well, and I she was certainly happy that it had decided flower after so many years, but just wasn't sure what might have prompted it.
Yeah.
We're talking with Melinda Myers. She is a garden expert based in Milwaukee and the author of many gardening books. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk, and let's go to John in Milwaukee next. Hi, John.
Good afternoon, or good morning, I guess. Hi, Judith and Melinda.
Hi, John.
Here's my question regarding a tree I planted 7 years ago. 7 years ago, a high wind blew over a flowering crab in my front yard. So I removed the tree, root ball and all, augmented the soil with what you had described, and put in a six-foot red bud, maybe 5 or 6 foot. Well, that was 7 years ago. And it is hardly growing, and by that I mean maybe a foot or two. Also, in the last three springs, when the snow has melted, there's a few smaller branches that have died that I need to cut back. So I'm not seeing any growth. I'm wondering, do I have a root girdling problem, perhaps? My wife would like to haul it out, but, you know, it's not dead. I'm just wondering what might be my problem.
Sure. All right. Melinda, what do you think? So it's been about 7 years, and the red bud really hasn't shown much growth.
Yeah, usually takes a couple years for them to get started, so we're past that point. We'd expect to see a little bit more growth, but red buds can be slow. We always want to look for the Columbus, as in Columbus, Wisconsin, or Minnesota strain when growing red buds. They're much hardier. The Columbus were propagated from red buds in Columbus, Wisconsin, where their streets are lined with red buds, and they have a red bud festival in April that someday I'm going to get to. And then the Minnesota strain was selected, obviously, for hardiness in the Twin Cities area. So, you know, for those who haven't planted one, that's one issue. They're also susceptible to verticillium wilt. And we had one where I was teaching at MATC, Milwaukee Area Technical College, years ago, and we were able to keep after pruning out the infected branches, and it seemed to survive. An east face is a really good area for red buds for protection. So, you know, if you're not getting, you know, they're not fast growers, but a foot in 7 years, foot into 2 feet, you know, I would, if you haven't fertilized it, maybe give it, again, a little low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer like a Milorganite. Now would be fine. And then, you know, if you can talk your wife into one more year, maybe wait and see what happens. The problem is you've invested 7 years, and I can hear you feeling like, one more year, let's just see if it takes off and finally roots. Girdling roots are a possibility. Usually you see a flattened side if it's already interfering, where that root grows around the trunk, and that could interfere with the flow uptake of water and nutrients. And then pulling back the soil, you know, getting a certified arborist maybe to look at it, pull back the soil, see if there's anything. If it's a small root, disconnecting it, pruning the root out may be sufficient, but there might be one lower down. So might be worth just kind of carefully digging around, see what's going on, a little low-nitrogen fertilizer, and give it a year. Otherwise, maybe start working on negotiating the replacement plant next fall.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks for that call. And let's go to Carol in Chippewa Falls next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Yeah, I have two rhubarb plants that have been in my family for years, and I've transplanted them twice. Well, I moved up to Chippewa Falls from Onalaska, and I put them in at the edge of the yard, which is a bank that goes down, and didn't do very well this spring. I mean, they're looking pretty pathetic. Do I dare transplant them again at this point? Because I'm thinking they're not getting enough sun, and I'm worried that they're possibly not wintering well because they're so close to the edge of the hill.
Hmm. Yeah, you know what? Rhubarb's pretty tough. The best times, obviously, to transplant, I like early spring as they're coming up. I have done it many different times of the year out of necessity, like so many of us have to do when we transplant plants. You know, if you feel they're really struggling, and if you've had good success moving them before, you know how to, you know, dig up a good-sized root ball, get them in a place where they're going to thrive. You know, it's just that they lose a lot of moisture with the big leaves, and the warm temperatures coming can be very stressful. But, you know, if they're struggling now, moving them may be a good solution, you know, because it may be better to put them in a place they are happy than have them struggle where they're just getting by.
So even though the transplanting itself could be a little stressful, once they're in a better place, they might recover a lot faster.
Exactly.
Okay, sounds good.
Hey, good luck. Let us know how it works for you.
Please All do, right. Carol. Thanks. And we have Cheryl in Waukesha next. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This year I decided to try to grow seed potatoes in the containers on my porch. I like to bake a lot of potatoes, and I put them down low, covered them up. They're up about 4 inches. I covered it with dirt. Do I just continue that till they come out of the pot?
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. Some people will do straw or marsh hay, but because they're in a container, having a little more potting mix is going to hold the moisture better. You know, if they were
right,
in the...
I mixed garden mix in with some purple cow manure and a little Miracle-Gro.
Potting mix
in there to give it the nutrients for a while, and then I don't know what, do I feed it then in 3 or 4 weeks again?
Yeah, check what the bag will tell you, and the Miracle-Gro will tell you kind of how often you should be doing it, and then follow those directions so you don't overdo it. But yeah, I would just continue to fill the container with the pot with your mix, because that's going to hold the moisture better. You know, some people will plant potatoes and then fill it with straw, you know, above ground, but you've got soil in the ground, which holds the moisture, unlike a container. So I have to tell you a funny story. I bought seed potatoes to do in a potato bag, kind of a cloth container, and I don't know where I put them. I'm sure I will find them soon when they start smelling.
They're sprouting, hoping they're going to find some dirt. Oh, dear.
So I'm going to do exactly what you did. So, yeah, I've got them on my, I've got the...
I don't need to go above the container, like put chicken wire up and then some kind of a moisture barrier to, and keep planting higher yet. It's a 5-gallon pail.
Yeah, no, I think just fill the pail up and then you're fine.
Okay, and just keep feeding them whatever the instructions are in the Miracle-Gro.
Exactly. And you've
All
got,
right.
And you've got holes in that 5-gallon pail, correct?
Yes.
Excellent.
5 holes in the bottom.
Excellent.
Good drainage.
Well, that's wonderful. And that, and you know, that just shows the creativity of gardeners. You can grow almost anything
right
in a pot if you can keep it contained upright if you need to and watered properly.
Well, and Cheryl, you might have to share your potatoes with Melinda since she can't remember where she put hers.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Cheryl. That's funny. You know, Melinda, I have to say you probably made a lot of people feel a lot better by admitting that, because I think we've all done things like that.
You know,
so
I found these really cool ones and... Okay.
Wow. Well, there you go. They're somewhere in there.
They are, and I will find them eventually because they will lead me to them.
Yes, yes. Whether you want to find them in the state they're in or not. Rick in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Rick.
Yes, good morning. I have a two-part question on growing vines.
Okay.
I'd like some recommendation on flowering vines that can be grown in containers next to fences. And secondly, I'd like some recommendation on vigorous perennial vines, vines so vigorous they can compete with grapevines that, of course, would be grown in the soil on a long-term basis.
Okay, so can I ask, so on the containers, vines for containers, are you looking for a perennial that you could leave in the container and have it climbing on the fence, or just something summer?
No, just seasonal, just for the season. Something, I'm thinking of something like moonflower.
Moonflowers are good. They're late bloomers, late in the season bloomers, so that's always a challenge with morning glories, and moonflowers are a type of morning glory. So, I mean, the foliage is nice. Just be prepared to wait a while for the flowers.
Okay.
I like hyacinth bean vine. I'm using it along my railing on my back fence. It has the undersides of the leaves are kind of reddish-purple. It has purple flowers, the bean, and then the bean pods are purple. There's debate on if they're edible or not. I've read stories where you cook them, dump the water, cook them, dump the water, cook the dump and dump the water, and they're safe to eat. And I'm like, I think I'm just going to look
at
them.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of other beans out there.
I think so, too, that we know taste good. So, but it's a beautiful plant, and sometimes it'll even reseed, and that could be grown in a pot. Canary vine, which is a type of climbing nasturtium, is very vigorous. Black-eyed Susan vine.
Hmm.
It has yellow or creamy flowers or orange flowers with a black center, and that's a pretty vigorous. These all do best in full sun. And cardinal flower, which is a relative of the morning glory, but dissected leaves, bright red flowers, and it tends to bloom earlier than the morning glory and the moonflower.
And the cardinal flowers are very popular with butterflies, bees, and hummingbirds.
Yes, exactly. So, and it's the vine, because there's the upright cardinal flower in moist soils, and then there's the cardinal vine that just so people go out and they get led to a cardinal plant, and they're like, well, this isn't going to buy. So thanks for mentioning that, too. So for perennials, the only problem with getting something that's going to be as competitive with grapes is that then you'll have two very vigorous plants. So just be sure you want that. Kiwi, the hardy kiwi, Arctic Beauty kiwi. If you get a male and a female, you will get grape-sized kiwis. The male have better flower color with a green leaf with cream and pink. It's very pretty and very vigorous. And you prune them actually like you do grapes. So if you need to control them, that would be good.
Mm.
The Kentucky or American wisteria, 5 years before it blooms usually, but beautiful blue, fragrant flowers, very aggressive. So that would work with that grapevine. I think those would be two. And then the five-leaf akebia, I've grown in heavy shade, and it's kept it contained. The county easement next to my house, the county pruned their trees, and I've noticed a little more sun getting in and that vine starting to creep a little bit. So, you know, if it's full sun, it would take it and it would be vigorous, but it may start running into your landscape. So I would maybe keep that for the shade, five-leaf akebia. But those are some things. And then sweet autumn clematis. Once it's established, boy, that thing will grow and cover your grapevine. Beautiful white fragrant flowers in the fall, and it looks pretty. My neighbor has Boston ivy on her house, and if I forget to prune my clematis, it's climbed on her house. I thought it was beautiful. She was not impressed.
She was not so impressed.
So that might look even pretty in the fall with those grapevines.
Oh, nice.
What about trumpet vine?
Trumpet vine is very good. It does send runners out. I was debating whether to mention that one. Great for hummingbirds. It's beautiful. Go low on the nitrogen because it will grow but not flower then. Trumpet vine will hold its own, definitely. Just be prepared. You may get some runners coming out in your landscape, and I know some gardeners have kind of been irritated that that happened. So,
what color are the flowers on the trumpet vine?
Orange or yellow.
Okay. I'm thinking, actually, that the house next to us has a vine that's going up the side of the house, and it has kind of long, almost oblong, orangey, peachy kind of colored flowers, and the hummingbirds seem to love that. And I'm wondering if that might be it.
I bet it is. And then there's also the trumpet honeysuckle, but they're much smaller. You know, they're more like a couple inches long trumpet shape. And that one's pretty aggressive. I think it would hold its own if it was in full sun with the grapevine. But yeah, the trumpet vine's wonderful. And I have one in my little yard, which is really too little for it. Hops is another one, but it does tend to send up suckers. I've been trying to kill mine for 15 years.
Oh, just make beer.
Yeah, I know. Last year I heard there was a hop shortage, and I'm like, wow, I could have helped out the beer industry
here. Well, I hope that those were some good suggestions for you, Rick.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck.
And I just want to remind people, because Melinda, I'm just in awe of all the ideas that you were able to come up with off the top of your head. When you hear things, you know, like a great list like that, and I think it would be really hard to jot all those down, you can always go and re-listen to the program in our archives. If you go to WPR.org, all of our shows are archived there, and you can go and re-listen. They're usually up within a couple hours of the actual broadcast. And so you can go and re-listen and take notes and pause and write things down and go back to that. So because you just gave some amazing, amazing recommendations there. We had a caller who wanted to know, is there such a thing as overwatering a container plant?
Only if you have like dug up your garden soil. If you have a well-drained potting mix and you have drainage, it's really hard, almost impossible to overwater. But if you have a bad mix that doesn't have good drainage or you don't have drainage holes, that's an issue. And just with self-watering pots, I want to make most now have what are called WEEP, W-E-E-P, WEEP holes, so that at the top of the reservoir, if we get a lot of rain or you do water too often, the excess flows out so that you don't end up with water-soaked soil and rotted roots. So it is really hard to overwater a container pot as long as you have a good, well-draining potting mix in it.
Great. And Bill in Rockford, Illinois is up next. Hi, Bill. Bill?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Sorry. I was doing something. I started out with a vegetable garden. It was 1,600 square feet. It was 40 by 40. And it's terraced with seven terraces.
Wow.
Well, I'm starting to push 80 now, and it's getting to be too much for me to do. And it, I can cut down the terraces by, I don't know how, I get an awful lot of weeds right now, and I'd like to cut down maybe four of them, and so they wouldn't be so much work. Can you suggest anything, a covering or a plant that would bloom there besides grass?
Or is this...
I have to put grass in, and... I got to dig it up the year I used that, I rotate the terraces.
Okay. This is in full sun, I take it?
A lot? Full sun, yes.
Shrubs with a good organic mulch would be a good option. Plants always take maintenance, but my years with the City of Milwaukee Forestry, when we did some studies, we found that shrubs were probably one of the lowest maintenance plants we were growing. And so beefing up our boulevards with shrubs, so they were ornamental, beautiful, and a little bit lower maintenance. So you might want to look for some shrubs, things that take full sun, things like junipers, and there are lots of new junipers. So if your buying goes to the old...
Before you go too far, I don't want to eliminate the terraces. I want to rotate.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. Okay, I thought you were done doing so much.
Right,
you want like an annual ryegrass or buckwheat or something that would feed the soil?
Well,
or just annual flowers? Or what? I guess I totally misunderstood. I'm sorry.
Did you say buckwheat?
You know, if you can find it, buckwheat is used by a lot of organic gardeners for, you grow it and you till it into the soil as a green manure crop, and that works very well.
Is it an annual or a perennial?
It's an annual, so you would do that, and then you could till it up and then till it under. Ryegrass, too, a lot of people will do an annual ryegrass and then till that under, because you want to just do it dormant one year and then plant it the next.
Right.
So those would be some cover crops that you could try. That would help feed your soil and keep the weeds down, and then you just have to, buckwheat, I've heard people say they've had some problems finding it.
Well, and what about something like some kind of a bean crop that you might not necessarily be interested in harvesting the beans, Melinda, but don't legumes fix nitrogen?
Soil? Yeah, yeah.
So that might be an option, too. All right. Well, thanks for that call, Bill. We are talking with Melinda Myers. She is a Milwaukee-based garden expert, host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and author of many garden books. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk. We are talking about gardening with Melinda Myers, and I just want to let you know that Monday, Larry will be back at 11. He is going to be talking with Wisconsin author Sarah Rath about her new novel, The Waters of Star Lake. And then Monday at 11:45, Larry talks with Mad Dog and Merrill about summer grilling, and especially about what to marinate, how to marinate, and why. So lots more coming up next week. We had Tammy from Green Bay emailing Melinda, and she says, I have many terracotta pots planted with annuals. Some critters keep digging up and ruining the plants. I think the culprits are the chipmunks living under the porch steps. How can I dissuade the critters from digging up my plants without taking drastic measures?
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I can tell you how to control animals, but I'm a softie, so I always, you know. So what she may want to do, and I know this is a pain, but sometimes with containers, if you cover them with netting, right at when you plant them, so just get a hold of either some Remay Harvest Guard, some season floating row covers, or fine netting or bird netting, and cover them and anchor it to discourage them, then they often find somewhere else to go. And then your plants get started, and then they can hold their own. That's one option. There's also something called a mini scarecrow, but you and your neighbors have to agree this is okay. What happens is, you may know that the regular scarecrow is like as a motion-sensitive sprinkler and used for deer, pretty effective. This one, it's just a little can, and you mount it at whatever height you think the animals are going to walk past it. They walk past, a blast of compressed air shoots out, and then you hear this big, really loud. And the idea is you're training them, so, uh-oh, that air is going to hit us, it's going to be loud, and they run away. But you have to listen to that loud noise for a while. So
that would be where the getting agreement from the neighbors comes in.
That would be very important, yes. And so that's one option. There are some repellents. The animal stopper products actually smell good, so there aren't very many repellents that smell good and are guaranteed to work, and they're all natural. So that may be one, looking for the chipmunk, groundhog, squirrel stopper. Mm-hmm. You might want to try that. But with any, and then some people have said they've had good luck with cayenne pepper, and some haven't.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those things you try. There are a lot of, trapping and other things, but what I heard you say is you didn't really want to go that route, and
right.
I'm with you. It's, you know, some people say feeding them, but, are they bringing their cousins in with
right.
them? You know, okay, hey, good eats here, and then when they finish up the food, they're working in your garden. So anything you can do to discourage them, physically keep them out of the plantings right away, usually it's easier to stop the feeding or prevent it than to break the habit.
What about products like, for instance, like fox urine that you can put around the perimeter?
You know, check that out. I've had, and some people find they have really good luck. I've also had some people say that, they were using coyote urine, which scared the fox away, which were taking care of some of the small mammals.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the fox urine would be a good choice. Unless that's marketing, and this is I'm getting into Scott Craven's territory.
Yeah.
Sorry, Scott. I'll stop now.
No. You
might want to give it a try, because in any of the repellents, whether it's the urine-based products or the, you know, cayenne pepper or the commercial repellents, that may be, you know, one of, you know, monitor, see what kind of success
mm-hmm.
you have. It's tough. They're so cute and adorable, you know. And you want to enjoy them, but you want to protect your plants, too.
And I have to say, the thing that I hold most against the chipmunks is that they will nibble on every single tomato. It's like, just choose one and eat it all. Don't nibble on every single one. And that's
exactly.
What really gets to me.
Yes, we could share. But
exactly.
We need to share.
Exactly. Not sharing a single tomato, though.
Oh, I'm hearing this could be an ugly summer in your
yes,
garden.
Yes, yes, it could. Well, let's go to Lynette in Colgate next. Hi, Lynette.
Hi, I apologize in advance for the wind noise. I'm out at the strawberry farm.
No problem.
Oh, excellent.
I have access to lake seaweed.
Okay.
Apparently, it dries out really fast and it's real lightweight. Is that a good, like, compost, fertilizer, peat moss kind of thing that can be rototilled into the garden?
Yeah, as long as there have been no plant toxic chemicals, which there probably isn't, because it sounds like they're probably harvesting the weeds instead of trying to kill them with any kind of product. I know a lot of people on lakes will use it. Usually it's quantity, and so spreading it out, letting it dry, either composting it or, you know, anytime you can shred up your material, it's going to break down faster, so you could use it as a mulch, an organic mulch, and then till it into the garden.
if you're not going to be using that gardener, add some additional nitrogen to help break it down, or compost in a pile and then move it in. So yeah, seaweeds, I forget the nutrient analysis, but pretty low in a little bit of nitrogen. I think there's some phosphorus in seaweed as well. And so, yeah, it's an organic matter. As long as there's no chemicals they've used in the lakes that might be on the seaweed that could damage the plant, it would be fine.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lynn.
Good luck with that.
And Donna in Hartford has a question about containers. Hi, Donna.
Yes, good morning. A pleasure to speak to both of you today.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. When I was growing up, Mom put good old garden soil into the containers for her flowers. And
they always did great, didn't they?
Right, and they did. And now with all the special things, how does one go about recycling them at the end of the year? Because I know it's not good to just go dump that stuff back into your vegetable garden area.
Well, what I do with mine is I change mine out every year, and so I pop mine into my compost bin, and I leave, you know, the dead plants, if they weren't diseased or insect infested, I just dump the whole thing into my compost bin, and my weeds and my kitchen scraps usually go in the worm bin, but, you know, and then I compost it. Yeah, I end up with some perlite in my garden, which usually breaks down over time, but that's the way I find for me that I'm reusing it. The garden soil you could use if you amend it. You know, it's that mom-grandma thing. You know, we all have those relatives that would take a cutting of something, throw it in the garden, it would root, right? So, you know, it's just, and you may be lucky, but yeah, you might want to, you know, if you want to use some garden soil, try to lighten it up a little bit, and then consider recycling it, because I use mine in my gardens, both my vegetable gardens and my flower beds after it's been composted.
And so what I actually did,
with
my containers from last year, because I do plant some things in the ground, some things like beans and squash will do okay near black walnuts. So I do plant, and happily those are kind of, you know, big area kind of things too, especially the zucchinis. I do dump the ground from my containers into the garden after, you know, after the season is over, and then I just mix it in. So it's not, you know, the plants are not being, that are being, or the seeds that are being planted in the ground are not going just in used up garden container soil, but they're, you know, it's enriching things, but it's also spreading it around.
And, you know, the other thing I wanted to mention, too, you recycled 5-gallon buckets. A lot of nurseries and garden centers now are recycling containers.
Yes.
And they often are happy if somebody wants to ask first to go raid the recycling bin. And a lot of times you'll find tree and shrub pots that also work well for vegetables. And so, and I also do double potting. Like I have a, I just bought this compact, I'm so excited, raspberry called Shortcake.
Oh.
2 to 3 feet tall and wide. I have regular raspberries in a pot that are going to bloom and produce fruit, but they're huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And thorny. This is not thorny. So I'm going to just put it in a little bit bigger container after my harvest and set it in a pretty pot so it looks nice on my patio. In the fall, lift it out, bury it to insulate the roots, and I don't care about that ugly old shrub pot.
Right.
And it was free, and I'm giving it a second life. And it also is a good way, if you have beautiful annuals, a plain black pot is a great way to show them off.
Great. So that raspberry variety is called Shortcake?
Shortcake.
All right.
Yeah, I know. And it's fun. And it's thornless.
Oh, nice.
I know. So this is my first year. So I've got my bowl of oatmeal ready.
There you go. Well, thanks for that call, Donna.
Thanks, Donna.
Thank you.
And we are talking with Melinda Myers of Melinda's Garden Moments and multiple books. And I wanted to point out a couple of things on the Facebook page. Suzanne posted photos of her container garden, and it is called, let's see here, Four Elements Herbals. And she also has information about an open house that they're having Saturday the 9th. And also there was a photo, actually several photos that were posted of a bucket garden by one of our listeners. And lots of things to look at on the Facebook page. And again, that's the Larry Miller Show, MEILLER. And let's take a quick call from Cheryl in Prentice. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
We have a lovely climbing purple clematis vine that grows up on a garden arch, And this spring, my husband accidentally cut down half of the woody vine from last year that the new vine grows up on. And the clematis is very healthy and growing fine on the half he didn't cut. But I'm wondering what I can do to get the vine to grow all the way across the arch as it did in previous years.
Okay. So it's a clematis vine. He cut half of it. The other half's good. And you just want to promote growth?
Right. See, okay. He cut off the part that the new vine in the spring grows up on.
Okay.
And so I guess it didn't really come because there wasn't anything for it to cling on to. But do you think I'll have to wait until next spring to try to do something with it?
Yeah, and if I'm understanding it, because clematis will put out new growth from the base. They'll put out growth from whatever stems that are left standing. And you just start upset because it's new growth at the bottom that's not covering the arch, correct?
Right.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm getting the right picture. Sorry. So what I would suggest is, yeah, time is all you can really do. You know, proper care, which you obviously know how to do, and there's nothing to speed it up. It's just going to take time for it to come back out. And then, you know, one of the things, I have my Sweet Autumn clematis on an iron fence, and so it's hard for it to climb up. So I leave some of the dead stuff on for it to attach to and climb. But it doesn't sound like that's what you're waiting for. It's just going to have to wait and give it time to grow. The good news is there's a good established root system, so it should regrow much faster. So give it time. Plus this crazy weather, you know, some plants are thriving. They got an early start, you know, and then it got cold and they kind of went into status quo, and then they're growing by leaps and bounds. And some started and got frost damage. So it's been an interesting year. I've seen some ginkgo trees that were frost damaged. You can see the damaged leaves amongst the good, healthy ones. So I just would give it time. Unfortunately, that's all you really can do is give it time. Over-fertilizing can push growth, but it might also impede flowering. So, you know, again, you don't want to overdo the fertilizer in hopes of getting it to grow at the expense of flowers. So, unfortunately, patience.
Well, thanks for that call, Cheryl. And we are talking with Melinda Myers of Melinda's Garden Moments. You can find lots of great information on her website, including some upcoming events at melindamyers.com, and that's MYERS.com. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, and it's Garden Talk. Well, it's always a treat when Melinda Myers joins us for Garden Talk. She's the author of more than 20 garden books and is the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. Melinda always has great advice for new techniques as well as tried and true methods. Thanks again for joining us today, Melinda.
Oh, my pleasure. Always fun.
It's been a great conversation. And, you know, I think the container gardening is something that more and more people are considering because it really does feel a lot less intimidating to tend even, you know, a couple dozen containers than looking out over a big expanse of garden that needs weeding and mulching and all kinds of things like that.
You bet. And it's great for kids, too. And it's great for people maybe with bad knees and backs
because
the garden's elevated. My granddaughter is my little gardener. And so we made a container. I was having her fill the big pot up with potting mix so I could get the planting done. And so then she put together quite the interesting combination.
I bet.
And but you know what? It's something fun that she's very proud of. And, you know, we did it together. And I think kids love to water. So this is a way they won't
kill
the plant.
There you go.
So, you know, I think it's also a fun thing for gardeners of all ages. But you're right. And I was looking at some of the posts, and I see something on butterfly encounters. And you can bring hummingbirds and butterflies to your patios, decks, and balconies with containers, too, using the right plants like Kufia. Cigar plant is an old-fashioned favorite, but the new bat plant, or tiny mice, it looks like little mice faces, will bring the hummingbirds. It's very fun. Verbena benariensis, which is Brazilian verbena, very tall plant, great as a vertical accent or a grow-through plant, you know, plant it with grasses, great for hummingbirds and butterflies. The fuchsias, if you have a shade garden, will bring in those hummingbirds.
Nice.
So it, you know, containers can also bring in the birds and butterflies, which I think is a frustration for small space gardens. You feel like, well, I can't have a butterfly garden. You can in a pot. And, yeah, you're not going to have thousands, but you will be amazed at the number of butterflies and hummingbirds.
and even birds for a Jester Purple Majesty Millet when it goes to seed, mm. that will come into your container garden and add some color and motion to your landscape.
And I wanted to mention that one of the links that we put up, I think it's a comment under the status about today's show, is a link to a whole article from Organic Gardening from a past yeah. issue about containers. And you were just talking about your granddaughter's interesting combinations. I think one of the things that the Organic Gardening article talks about is that you want three, if you're doing a container that's, you know, really going to be a focal point, and like you said, you know, something visual to look at, not so much, you know, growing vegetables in, but that you want thrill, spill, and fill. So you want something that's kind of that focal point, like you said, a nice upright plant, something that will trail off, you know, to add some interest that way, and then something that kind of fills in the rest of the area too.
Yeah, and I mix my vegetables and flowers because, like I said, I have a plant addiction problem. and so I'll use tomatoes or peppers as my vertical accent, or bronze fennel, and then or rosemary. And then I'll mix some flowers, edible flowers like pot marigolds
yes.
do great.
And nasturtiums you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I love nasturtiums.
Oh, me too. And they're so fun. They make you look gourmet when
yes.
you add them to your dishes. So, you know, you can mix it up too if, you know, if your space is limited. And maybe you don't need quite as many, you know, maybe a couple of tomato plants and a couple of peppers
right.
and a couple of eggplants. And then add in some complimentary flowers
mm-hmm.
and herbs. And it's a great way to have good-looking plants in your thriller or your filler or
right.
your filler could be edible.
Right. Very good point. I wanted to mention that Larry posted on the Facebook page, "I've had great luck with passion flowers in a pot growing up my porch railing. Have to replant them every summer, but very attractive, and once in a while you get a fruit as well."
And those flowers are unusual. And for those people that are always dragging plants inside, there are many gardeners have good luck overwintering, but Larry has the right idea.
Yeah.
Replant them.
Right, right.
So thanks, Larry. I that's an excellent idea, and they're so cool and unique looking.
They really are. They're beautiful flowers.
Yeah.
They look very tropical. It's always surprising when you see them here. Well, let's go back to the phones, and Pat in Palmyra is next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Yes, I have a good solution that I found for chipmunks in my pots.
Okay,
I just take a thin layer of little pebbles or small stones and cover the whole surface of the ground with those, and it not only keeps the chipmunks out, but it disperses the water very nicely, and it's very natural. The chipmunks do not go in there and dig in those stones. They do not like it.
Huh.
Excellent. Thank you. And, you know, that brings up, you know, tumbled glass has kind of been fun, and for people that want to add a little color, that might be another variation on that, too. So thank you for that suggestion. That's great.
So the chipmunks just don't like walking on them, or it keeps them from digging?
They don't. Well, both. They don't like to dig around the little stones. And I just use small little stones and kind of just a single mm-hmm. layer. You don't have to pile them in. Just place them around the plant and cover the whole area of the topsoil. And they stay out. They don't like it.
Okay. Well, I might have to try that because, again, I don't want to be having those nibbled on tomatoes again this year.
And always monitor, you know, if there are enough of them and they're hungry enough, they may still put up with the pebbles because I see them digging in walls sometimes. But, you know, she's right. If you make it difficult, they're going to go somewhere else that's a lot easier on their little feet. So thank you for the suggestion. That's great.
Thanks, Pat. And Mac in Land O'Lakes is next. Hi, Mac.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I got a question about ground juniper.
Okay.
And the problem is it's kind of like disappearing on me, and I can't decide whether it was the deer that munching on it or the needles dropping off of a white pine that are over it. And that just happened this year, and it's been in here for almost 20 years.
It's physically disappearing or it's dying off?
Let's say dying off.
Okay. Check the base because I've seen a lot of vole and rabbit damage on junipers where they chew at the base of the plant, and then that takes the cambium, the system that carries the water and nutrients from the roots to the needles and back, the energy from the needles back to the roots. And I've seen a lot of problems with, you know, it's a great habitat for them. You know, those little critters running around, and there's bark right there. They've got the cover of the juniper. And we often miss it because of the dense covering, and you'll see the white bark underneath. That's a possibility. The white pine needles wouldn't be hurting it unless they're totally covering it, but if there's a white pine that close, it might be shading it or competing for moisture. Junipers like full sun. They can take dry conditions, but you know, if there's limited moisture and there's a big tree with extensive root system, it's going to get the water first. So if that would be my concern related to the white pine. There are some diseases, Phomopsis twig blight, where you'll get kind of a branch at a time dying back. Pruning those out, disinfecting your tools between the cuts will also help. Sometimes that's enough, depending on how badly infected. So look at the base for animal damage. And then, yeah, animals eating is an issue. Check for sunlight and moisture. They like it dry, but thorough watering is less frequently during drought. And then check for the blight. You just see branch by branch, prune them out, get rid of them, and disinfect your tools between cuts.
Okie doke, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, good luck. I see you and you tell me you had good luck with one of those solutions.
All right, thanks for that call, Mac. And let's go to Jeremy in Oshkosh. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, yes. I think I'm having some problems with the weird spring and winter we had.
Yeah.
We planted the garden on Memorial Day weekend, and we have beans that are about an inch and a half, 2 inches tall, and they're already starting to produce beans.
Oh, wow.
And I was wondering if there's anything we can do to combat that or if that's most likely just going to be a loss.
I would pinch off the flowers to get them to go back to growing. You pegged it right, this crazy warm, cold weather we're having often tricks plants, or if they're under stress, they'll often produce flowers and fruit. I would just pick off the flowers and try to get it going back to vegetative growth. It wouldn't hurt to do a second planting if you have room to do that, or, you know, give it another week after you pinch off the flowers, and if you're not getting good growth, then I definitely replant.
Okay.
And especially since beans do, you know, as long as you keep picking beans, they'll keep producing. Exactly. It seems like, you know, taking off this first crop of flowers really shouldn't impact the overall harvest.
Exactly. And when you're planting tomatoes and peppers, you know, unless you've got them in a pot, a big pot that so many garden centers are now selling with flowers and fruit, and, you know, are we suckers? Yes, we are. We'll buy those. you know, but the small transplants, when you put them in your garden, you're going, oh, yay, it's already got a flower. Pinch it off. Mm-hmm. You don't want it to set fruit. Otherwise, it's going to be stunted. So
right.
I'm glad he brought up that question, because I'm seeing that on a lot of plants, too. Just I think it's this crazy weather. So always, as hard as it is, pinch off those flowers.
And we're quite sure you'll get a nice crop of beans later in the season, Jeremy. All right. Well, let's go to Rita in Glenwood City next. Hi, Rita.
Hi. In old days, they used to take a sweet potato and stick toothpicks in it and put it in a glass of water, and it'll grow a vine.
Right.
Well, I tried that, and I had this beautiful, beautiful vine, but I also have a massive root system.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to put that in a container outside.
Okay.
Should I get rid of some of the roots, snip them off?
You can trim them off. Usually the roots that form in water are slightly different than those that form in a potting mix or soil if you plant it outside. So it may be a period where it's going to be a little bit stunted, but yeah, if you need to trim them off to fit in the container, great. If you don't, then I just leave them all intact and plant it in a nice sized pot. The sweet potato vine that we grow as an ornamental is a variety, a cultivar of sweet potatoes, so you've just grown your own. So that'll be fun. You may get sweet potatoes on the bottom, but sometimes they're not as reliable, but a fun vine to enjoy in your garden. So, yeah, I just pot it up and leave as many roots as you can. And if you need to trim a few, that's okay. That won't hurt the plant.
Okay. Now, do I stick the potato all the way in now into the soil?
Yeah, you can bury that crown where that new growth, where the twigs are, you know, the stems are coming out. You should have some new growth, viney growth as well.
Yep.
And those need to be under the soil about an inch, the top of the sweet potato, planted about an inch deep.
Okay, cool. Thank
Excellent.
You so much.
Enjoy. Have
yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
that is a fun thing to do, kitchen scrap gardens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just for kids. I meet lots of gardeners. You know, they have a grapefruit, and they're like, oh, I'll try those seeds. And, you know, that's part of the fun of gardening is experimenting.
My mother used to, we didn't eat a lot of avocados when I was growing up, but when we would have one, she would always stick toothpicks in the pit and root it. And, you know, the plants were never that hardy looking, but
right.
it was always fun to just see, you know, something that looks pretty inanimate all of a sudden be growing roots and stems and things like that.
That's true. You are absolutely right.
Thanks for that call, Rita. I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned earlier, Melinda. You were talking about, I forget what it was, but you said something about tossing things into the worm bin. And I do have worm bins in the basement. And as I'm now getting ready to plant some things in my container garden, is the worm compost a good ingredient to add to those containers?
Oh, it definitely is. And in worm compost, we usually are producing such smaller amounts. I use it more like almost a top dressing
okay.
or fertilizer. You know, if you have lots of it, yeah, you can incorporate it. But it's a little more nutrient-rich than your regular compost
right.
in your bin. So a lot of times, I just try to space it out better.
Yeah, so just basically, and as we said, because you are watering containers
yes.
more and more often, you know, there is some of those nutrients tend to get washed out. So having that as a top dressing, it'll work its way into the rest of the pot pretty quickly.
Exactly.
Great.
And you can mix it into the potting mix and or compost and potting mix that you use. It won't hurt anything, but you know, if you're not producing huge quantities,
mm-hmm.
that's a way to spread it out and get a benefit on a lot of your containers.
Although I have to say those worms are really impressive. They are voracious.
They are. And, you know, I'm so happy you mentioned you have it in your basement because mine usually goes in the basement in the winter and then I keep it outside in the summer
oh.
because it's quicker.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a lot easier to tuck it into a shady spot so it doesn't dry out. And it's wonderful. It's a lot of fun. I need to kind of empty my compost as I'm doing some gardening, hopefully today and tomorrow, and put that to work in my garden and in my pot. So I'm glad you reminded me.
Oh, good. Well, happy to help. We are talking with Melinda Myers. She is a garden expert based in Milwaukee, the host of Melinda's Garden Moments. And you can get great information at her website, which is melindamyers.com. And Myers is M-Y-E-R-S. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk. And let's go to Mary Ann in Gordon. Next. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. My question is this. I've had wonderful shrubs, which are about 12 years old, in front of my house. And about 3 years ago, this vine started wrapping itself around the bushes.
Okay.
And that vine has killed off three of these huge bushes. And it's about to destroy the other three. What is that thing?
Can you describe the bush to me?
Yeah, the leaf, the vine that's crawling up, it has a variegated leaf with, I would say about a 2-inch leaf with, how would I describe a scissor cut for the, kind of the rough edges
okay.
going around.
Serrate, like the serrations on a knife?
Yes.
And when you say it's variegated, is it green and cream or green and red? Or?
It is green to light green.
Okay. And does it flower or fruit at all?
It does not.
Do you have, as the leaf is, oh, is the shape of like an apple tree leaf, or is it more like shield-shaped or arrowhead-shaped?
I would say arrowhead-shaped.
Do you have access to the Internet?
Yes.
What I would suggest, if you can do this, there's something called field bindweed that looks like a morning glory plant almost. Usually not variegated, but I'm just wondering if it's a nutrient and weather issue that makes it look light and dark, that can climb up the tree or up and vine up, wind around plants. If it does flower, it has like a morning glory bloom on it, and it's very difficult to get rid of. What I'd suggest, whatever this vine is, if it's perennial and it comes back every year, cut it to the ground. If it resprouts, if you don't mind using a chemical, paint Roundup on the leaves. It's absorbed through the leaves and goes into the roots, but it won't go into your plants if it hits the soil. It's absorbed through the leaves, so you want to make sure it doesn't hit the leaves of your shrubs. That's why I like cutting it back to the ground, letting it resprout, and then treating it when it's low to the ground. Easier to protect your good plants. And then just do repeated applications of that, and that will eventually kill it. But if you have access to the Internet, you might want to look up field bindweed.
Field bindweed, so bindweed.
Okay. Right. porcelain berry vine is an ornamental plant, but it's got a little more of almost like a grapevine leaf to it, and that's a cream and green. It doesn't sound like that, and I doubt that that's the issue, but you could check out porcelain berry vine just in case. Deadly nightshade and bitter nightshade are vines that are a little more herbaceous, you know, not so woody stem. They usually have tiny white flowers and red berries on them, and they can be very aggressive wrapping around. That's nightshade. So those might be some things if you want to identify exactly what it is to check out, do like an image search on the internet, and that might help you identify it. But if you just want to kill it, that would, you know, other than digging it out where you could damage your shrub roots, cutting it back and treating it with a total vegetation killer like Roundup. But check the label to make sure, you know, and just apply it to the leaves. You know, don't spray it. And it would work. That would help. And you may need a couple applications depending on the weed.
All right. Thanks for that call, Marianne. And let's go to Jackie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jackie.
I want to give you a goal. I've got another question. I want to give you a gold star for the autumn clematis.
Oh.
I have one. The base of it goes 20 feet from either side, and it. I never have to groom it or anything. It comes back. It's a wonderful block for something where you don't want people to see through.
Good point. You're absolutely right. And it's a tough clematis. I think it's the easiest clematis to grow.
It doesn't have great big flowers, but it's pretty in autumn. And boy, it cuts every. I don't want to keep my neighbors off, but it grew one time when I had it next to the back door. It grew over my gate across my driveway. Couldn't open the gate.
And Jackie, just because we're a little short on time, did you have a question about containers?
The question was, is there anything you cannot grow in a container?
You know, not really. The one thing you want to do if you're doing trees, shrubs, or perennials, and you want to use them as year-round accents in the garden, use a weatherproof container. I use plastic, and as long as I don't hit it with my snow shovel, they're good for a couple of years. Fiberglass is an excellent all-weather plant. In trees, shrubs, and perennials, things that you want to come back year after year, one zone hardier there where you live. So if you're in southeast Wisconsin, a 5, you'll want to use a 4 at least. Or what I do is I just do winter protection. I shove mine against the garage, take all my annual pots, set them around for insulation. Anything that will insulate those roots. I've had my weeping lilac in a pot for 15 years, a clematis in a pot for 10.
Wow. That's good to know. And yeah, I have to say the one thing that is that I don't do as well, one of the things I don't do as well as I should with the container gardening is the overwintering stuff. And I've just gotten, especially this past winter because it was so mild, I got pretty lucky on some things that I probably should have insulated better. That's a good idea to kind of surround them with the other pots that you're not trying to overwinter, so it keeps it a little protected.
And then in spring, I dump those and start my annual pots over, and it works great.
That's a great idea.
Yeah,
well, let's go to Diane in Athens for a quick question. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
Hi,
yes.
Diane.
I have my radio on somewhere else in the house. Just a second, please.
Okay. Actually, because we're really short on time, I think Diane's question is, can you reuse soil over and over in a container if it's used properly and if you're adding things to it?
You know, I prefer to start fresh just because, you know, it's a limited season and I have limited space. If it has not had disease or insect problems, by the time you take the old plant out, it's probably half full. Freshen it up with some compost or some new potting mix. I've done that on occasion when I've just been in a hurry to get something in. I prefer to start over. But yeah, definitely if you're going to reuse, try to mix in some fresh and then watch the nutrients. You may have to fertilize a little differently. But, you know, I understand it's a big expense. I wait for it to go on sale by bags and bags.
Right, right.
And then just because I just want to be successful, and then I reuse it like we were talking about and you do in the garden, so I don't feel like I'm wasting money. I'm
right.
Just reusing it.
Well, and again, you know, because you are creating such a small micro growing area, you really do need to give it that extra attention.
You bet. And so I think it's worth the investment for the increase in success I get.
So, Melinda, we have just about a minute left. Remind us of those events you have coming up.
I'll be at the Stein's stores tomorrow, actually. I'll be at the Mequon store, which is on North Port Washington Road. And then I'll also be at the Cedarburg Just Plants store, which is from 11 to 1. I'll be at Just Plants in Cedarburg on Western Avenue, and from 2:30 to 4:30 at the Mequon store on North Port Washington Road, doing summer containers. So I'll talk about plants. I'll put together a container, answer questions, bring your baggies with your insect problems and diseases, and questions on new plants you want to add to the landscape. We've had a great time with these, and I really hope people come out. It's my last visit to the stores till fall. So
wow.
People will join me, but I'll be out and about at garden tours, so check my events pages. I'll still be around Wisconsin all summer, so looking forward to meeting lots of listeners.
All right, and again, that website is melindamyers.com, and Myers is M-Y-E-R-S, since that's one that's spelled a few different ways. Melinda, as always, thanks so much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Judith. I appreciate the opportunity, and everybody, happy planting.
Yes.
I'm sure we all have a few things left.
Just a few. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk. I hope you'll stay tuned for great programming on the Ideas Network.